79 Richmond, Virginia, 23255. By the way, believe it or not, the just shall live by faith.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.
Well, good evening, Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality and not illusion or delusion that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And for the next hour, they're going to be the views of William Grigg, and we're going to be talking about the problem that we have as far as our the legal system is concerned, and basically in our courts today, we have corruption. And I hate to say this, but certainly this is the case. Today in America, one out of every 103 American adults is in prison. We have the largest prison population of any country in the world, far larger than they have in the ruthless, tyrannical, communist country over there, China, where they have almost four times as many people. We have more people in prison than they have in communist China today. And certainly one in every 33 adults in America is in prison, probation, or parole. Of the black population, of the young black people, 21 to 31, why, of course, one in three is in prison, probation, or parole. And what does that say to you? Well, we could go in the background of water fluoridation, hydrofluosilicic acid, the fact that in those communities where they use hydrofluosilicic acid in the drinking water, why the incidence of crime among the black is ever so much higher than it is in other communities. They know what they're doing, but the average American has no idea what's going on. Today, we have real problems in America as far as our criminal justice system is concerned. If you go into a federal court, why, you will ordinarily not simply be put up a charge. They will give you 50 charges, threaten to send you to prison for many, many centuries. I know Dr. Brzezinski. They wanted to send him to prison for 230 years, almost 2.5 centuries, because he had a cancer treatment that worked. And they wanted to silence him. They wanted to put him down. They tried him not once, but twice. Fortunately, the juries found him innocent in both instances because they saw all the people that he'd cured, but they didn't want that. They never questioned that his cancer treatment was effective. They wanted to shut him down. And the charge was, well, some people had sent his cancer medicine across state boundaries. It wasn't authorized by the FDA. Wasn't that he didn't cure people. Wasn't that he didn't have a cancer treatment. Wasn't that he wasn't a good doctor. But some of his drug was sent across state boundaries without the permission of the FDA. What sort of madness is that? Ladies and gentlemen, 97% of federal cases are settled by plea agreements because they will charge you with a dozen or 100 different crimes, 75 crimes, so that you go to prison for 200 or 300 years and you make a plea agreement and you plea and you may get off with a slap on the wrist. This is not a legal system. William, I want you to pick up the story because I think we have to address the corruption in the legal system, and we've got to get back to a system based upon justice and God's law rather than the intimidation and promoting fear in the population. Pick up the story.
You're exactly right, Dr. Stan. What we have right now is not a justice system. It's a way of rationalizing the imposition of the will of the powerful on the weak. And the case of Dr. Brzezinski is a wonderful example of that. Here's somebody who didn't do anything that a reasonable person would construe as a technical violation of regulations, let alone an actual crime. But because he had been doing something without the permission of those who presumed to rule him, that benefited people who had sought in an informed way, freely sought his services. He was being treated as a criminal in order to validate the interests of politically connected elites. And that's unfortunately very typical of the system under which we're living right now.
Well, I think it's important, ladies and gentlemen, that you understand what's going on. And then, of course, you help us remedy this. And basically, there is a group, a forum, there is a website. And you actually will talk about this evening, about what we need is justice in America.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
You may have heard about the 90 essential nutrients or the Mighty 90 needed for good health. But with all the products out there, what exactly are they talking about? The Mighty 90 is 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, 60 plant-derived minerals, and 2 essential fatty acids. So, now you know. But with all the products you see and hear advertised, what exactly do you buy to come up with the Mighty 90 and the right ratios to promote good health? Youngevity has made it easy with the Healthy Start Pack, which contains one canister of Beyond Tangy Tangerine Vitamin and Plant-Derived Mineral Complex, one bottle of Bone and Joint Enriching OsteoFX Plus, and one bottle of EFA Plus Essential Fatty Acids, all in the proper ratios to promote good health and vitality. For more information or to order, call 1-800-991-8730. That's 1-800-991-8730 and ask about business opportunities.
You may be new to freeze-dried foods. You may have storable food questions. You may want to buy your freeze-dried foods from a very reputable company and not go broke in the process. Welcome to the Freeze-Dry Guy. Okay, actually, we're more than just one guy. We're a California-based company that's been serving our U.S. military and other government agencies with the finest in freeze-dried storable foods and emergency rations since 1970. See all about us at freezedryguy.com. With Freeze-Dry Guy freeze-dried foods, you can and will be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. Freeze-Dried Guy foods are delicious, require little preparation, and will taste just as fresh decades from now as they do today. Just add hot water and serve. Backpackers consistently rate us number one year after year as the best tasting and ease of preparation. Isn't that what you want for your family? Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD. That's 866-404-3663 or go to freezedryguy.com. Freeze-Dry Guy, the best you can buy.
Back in a moment. Well, ladies and gentlemen, of course, William is simply talking about our system of juries. Now, at one time, why, of course, the jury was a very, very important issue in the legal system. And, of course, the grand jury certainly was the organization that would indict people. And certainly, it was not simply an extension of the clique that runs our jury system. Courts and our attorneys work together in concert. They have a system, and they are the law in this country. Now, basically, of course, at one time we had something called jury nullification. The juries would determine not only whether the person was innocent or guilty, they would also determine whether the law was certainly an accurate and constitutional law. And if there was a question that even if the person was guilty but the law was wrong, why, the jury would let them go. But this is not what the attorneys want. This is not what the judges want. This is not what this little fraternity that controls the judicial system want. And certainly, you go to a court in most places today, and you're going to be going to that jury, and you will be told, now, is there anybody here, and I had this happen to me, is there anybody here who will not go along with what I, the judge says is the law, that certainly will not certainly agree to follow along my interpretation of what's going on. If there's anybody here, please put up your hand and we'll excuse you. That was not the function of our system. Our jury was to be the intermediary. They were to represent justice, not the guilty, not the innocent. They were to represent justice. And we had a jury system that worked. We had a legal system that worked. And we did not have the corruption that we have today that has led to the point that what, 1 in every 103 adults in America is in prison today. Go right ahead.
One of the things I've written about is the fact that before Idaho became a state, back when we were still a territory, we had juries. We didn't have an established political system during Idaho's territorial phase of the sort that we had after it was constituted as a state. But even in the mining camps, the northern part of the state up in the panhandle, you had the juries that were formed for the purpose of adjudicating disputes, most of them having to do with claims or with suspected theft of gold, things of that sort. And you would have officers who would be constituted as constables or as peace officers who would be in charge of arresting, detaining, and then submitting for trial people who were plausibly accused of these crimes. They were tried by a jury of their peers, and if they were found guilty of crimes inferior to murder, they were simply evicted from a given mining area and told not to come back and made aware of the fact that if they came back, there would be even more gruesome consequences that would ensue. And so the point I'm making by sharing that anecdote is that the jury really does have primacy in any system of justice, and it can exist independent of an actual political government. And it operated very well during Idaho's territorial phase. Today, unfortunately, in the state of Idaho, now that we've become civilized, as statists would describe our circumstances, we have people like the execrable Wendy Olson, who is the federal prosecutor who persecutes this state, who makes it her business to rack up as many convictions as possible on as many dubious counts as she can contrive, using enactments that are really not even laws, but administrative decrees published by bureaucrats and inscribed in the Federal Register as if they had actual force of law. She was boasting in her newsletter about a year ago about the fact that she had brought in an unprecedented amount of money in civil forfeitures. These are, of course, amounts of money or property that are seized from people who aren't even tried in a court of law or whatever designation you wish to give to the institutions that are sort of a surrogate for the courts of law in our present system. They're not even tried on criminal charges. They simply have their property stolen from them by the federal government. They call it civil asset forfeiture. That conjuration supposedly changes the nature of what's happening. It's still theft, however they describe it. That's what happens in a supposedly civilized state that has a government-run so-called justice system, because the juries don't play a role in this procedure. They're doing everything they can to circumnavigate the jury system or even what passes for the criminal justice system now in federal court. There was a piece that came out earlier this year as the Supreme Court was finishing its last term. It was written by Adam Liptak of the New York Times. He's the legal commentator for that paper. And he pointed out that during the 2011, early 2012 term, the Supreme Court, and I quote now, has turned its attention away from criminal trials, which are vanishingly rare, and toward the real world of criminal justice, in which plea bargains are the norm and harsh sentences commonplace. Let me italicize and repeat the key phrase from that observation. Turned its attention away from criminal trials, which are vanishingly rare. In other words, to here in which trials effectively don't exist because juries effectively don't exist and prosecutors have been empowered to work their will through the draconian provisions for sentencing that allow them to take one act that almost always has nothing to do with an actual criminal offense against person or property, and from that single act extract as many as 10 or 12 chargeable offenses. And then, of course, what they do at this point is they use the force multiplier of mandatory minimums to rack up this mathematically impressive and very formidable potential prison sentence. You mentioned the case of Dr. Brzezinski. They wanted to send him away to prison literally for centuries. It's a fairly common thing for people to be faced with a prospect.
6 months, or maybe you'll pay a little fine. But now we want, here's what We want it about them.
And yes.
They may not put it in exactly those terms, but you certainly will go ahead and you'll testify against somebody else, whether it's true or not. They're not interested in truth, ladies and gentlemen. This system is not based upon truth or justice. Now, admittedly, there's some bad people out there. Admittedly, there may be conspiracies on the parts of their friends to protect them. But, of course, they will use this, you know, we go ahead, this is the way the situation is. Do you want to go to prison for 230 years, or will you simply take a three-month probation? But you will testify against your best friend, and here's what we want to hear you say. And if you do that, you get off scot-free, and this is how they go up the line. Well, basically, it's a convenient way to get a conviction of somebody you might not be able to convict otherwise. But how many innocent people are being sent to prison? Now, admittedly, we have guilty people who probably ought to be in jail. But do you really think, ladies and gentlemen, that we should have a society where one out of 33 adults is in prison, probation or parole in America today, that we should have more people in prison in America than they have in that brutal dictatorship known as communist China? There's something seriously wrong with our legals, but you're never going to hear that. And I'm just so glad that we have the opportunity that you, by your support of Radio Liberty, you've given us a voice so that to think of some of these things, you can correlate your minds, and then you can help to get them entered into the discussion on talk radio programs across them. We begin to address the issues which are strangling freedom and justice. Go right ahead, William.
I think one really good resource for that discussion is a website called judicialreformnow.com. Again, it's judicialreformnow, one word, judicialreformnow.com. And the author of that website, as you pointed out, Dr. Stan, is somebody who is very passionate about the need to reinstate justice in our justice system, and he outlines a 10-point program that would be the basis for activism, for what would hopefully be a movement that would coalesce in our country to put pressure on the various instruments of government to reform the judicial system. One of the things that he starts off with, of course, is jury nullification, which is a term of art, really, that has come into vogue over the last couple of decades. But simply put, jury nullification is the jury system. The purpose of the jury is to force the government to prove its case against a defendant and also to prove the validity of the law being applied. And the jury has plenary, that is to say, unqualified authority to decide both the facts of the case and the validity of the law. If they are convinced that a defendant has committed an act against a given law, if they're convinced on the facts that the defendant indeed committed the act he was accused of committing, but they are convinced that the law is innately unjust, the jury has the right to set aside the written law in favor of a verdict which resonates with the natural law. All laws have to be in harmony with the natural law. That's a principle which was made very clear in the writings of Blackstone. William Blackstone was a tremendously influential British jurist whose writings had a great deal of weight with the people who created the Constitution of the United States. He pointed out that all terrestrial or temporal, man-made law has to resonate with the law of nature, which is discernible through the exercise of right reason and also made clear through the moral operating system that we were given by our Creator. In the end, as you point out, Dr. Stan, it all has to harmonize with God's law. And God's law is based on the two great commandments. You acknowledge God's existence, and you love him, and then you love your neighbor as yourself. And the application of the second great commandment is the golden rule. Do unto others as you would be done to. And every act of government has to be in harmony with those principles. If it propounds something it calls, which is a violation of those principles, the government can call it a law, but it doesn't have the substance of law. So what do you do when you're confronted with a situation where somebody has obviously run afoul of a written enactment by government that it calls the law, and in doing so, he's not injured anybody else or done something that is clearly immoral or wrong? If you're sitting in a jury box and in the jury deliberation, you have the power, and no judge can take this away from you, to vote to acquit that man because he's not done any injury by violating a law that is worthy of human respect. If you don't have that right, you don't exercise that power, you're a mere functionary. You're an instrument of the will of the prosecutor. You're not a juror. So jury nullification is jury restoration, and that's one of the very first things talked about at JudiciNow.com.
If you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question or comment, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Ladies and gentlemen, these are vitally important issues. They're not openly discussed. It's about time they were. We'll be right back.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
Americans love pills. America's 40 million seniors will have consumed 1.6 trillion pills during their lifetime, not counting VitaPills. This is health journalist Bill Sardi. Americans are living longer an additional 18 years after age 65. How will senior Americans spend that time? You've got it, taking more and more pills to treat more and more disease. We need a better approach. How about a pill that promotes health rather than treats disease? That's where a pill I formulated comes in. It's called Longevinix, and it's a well-tested combination of herbs and vitamins proven to trigger genes activated by a limited-calorie diet, even mimicking physical exercise. Longevinix promotes healthy vision, heart pumping, immune response, blood clotting, and even mood. Call 1-866-405-4000 to order today. Healthy aging, Longevinix. Get started before you grow old. Call now, 1-866-405-4000.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Do you enjoy cooking? Would you like to learn the culinary secret that Barbara uses to enhance the flavor of Dr. Stan's food? Who's Barbara? She's Dr. Stan's wife. And what's her secret? She uses the delicious spices produced by Old Westport Spice and Trading Company. After using and enjoying their products for almost 20 years, Dr. Stan and Barbara decided they should offer their favorites to you. If you would like to please your family and enhance the flavor of your food, call 800-544-8927. That's 800-544-8927. I suggest you call today. Once again, the telephone number is 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927.
Hold that thought, we'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. It's at the William was simply talking about what happened in Russia when the communists came in. And, of course, they had a jury system there, but, of course, that then was replaced with a people's court. Wouldn't you like to go to a people's court? But then, of course, who were the people? Well, they were three or four people sent by the government to determine whether people were guilty or not. And certainly, if the government wanted you convicted, you were convicted. This idea, certainly, of independent citizens determining whether or not somebody is innocent or guilty, and then whether the law on which they're being tried is just. And we can have unjust laws, and we can have terrible, terrible corruption. Let me give you an example. I don't know how many of you heard our interview the other evening with Judge Douglas Bartlett, but Judge Bartlett actually was 7 years on the bench in Wisconsin. He was appointed by the governor, Tommy Thompson, and he was to deal with a lot of cases. They were large cases, large financial cases where groups of people were suing corporations. And after hearing the cases and evaluating them, he felt, of course, that the people had a just complaint against the corporations. Well, he was contacted by the governor's office and told that if he did not change his position, if he wanted these major corporations to pay a large sum of money to the people who'd been cheated, he was going to lose his position. He was going to be, he would not be reappointed as a judge. Now, this is a criminal activity, an effort to intimidate a judge. But, ladies and gentlemen, this goes on all the time. No matter how many judges are sitting, who are you going to report it to? You're going to kind of report it to the governor, Judge Tommy Thompson, who's behind all of this? Of course not. And ladies and gentlemen, today, if you actually speak out about the things we're speaking out, it can be a very, very dangerous thing. And believe me, they go after people. People in America are sent to prison. When they're innocent, other people are killed. This is not imaginary. This is the world I live in. I've been at this for 50 years. And we've dealt with these problems over and over again. Pick up the story, William, please.
What you're describing in the case in Wisconsin is a really good example of Soviet-style, I guess the word would be, law. As I mentioned, in the people's court system created by the communists in Russia, you had a judge and then you had two panels, or rather a panel of 2 to 6 people called assessors, and they became known as nodders. There's a wonderful and very informative law review article by former federal judge John C. Kogenauer, who's published in the Seattle University Law Review a number of years ago, where he was talking about the destruction of the jury system in Russia. And he said that the people's assessors became known as nodders for simply nodding in agreement with the judge. People's assessors virtually always agreed with judges. Acquittals were virtually non-existent. Unlike our adversarial system, the Soviet inquisitorial criminal justice system neither prioritized nor emphasized the rights of individual defendants, but instead paid homage to the interests of the state. I contend that we no longer have an adversarial system. We have a collegial system in which the prosecutor and court-appointed defenders, for the most part, people who are facing criminal prosecution are not the type of people who can afford to hire lawyers to represent their interests. Their lawyers are appointed by the court. But their relationship, that is to say, the relationship between the defense attorneys and the prosecutors, is more collegial than adversarial. I'm not saying that we need to be incivil, but we do need to be adversarial, because there's no way that you can actually have a process of determining the facts of a case if both attorneys are working for the same side.
You're absolutely right. We have a caller. His name is Chuck. He's from Auburn Hills in Michigan. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And Chuck, do you have a question or comment on this subject?
Yeah, I really appreciate that you guys are doing this, because you really don't hear this. People will probably think this stuff is crazy, but it's not. Yeah, I got to see this. Judges are not upholding the law, and the lawyers and prosecutors are lying and manipulating the witnesses and misleading the jury.
Well, no, basically, Chuck, we do have some honest lawyers, and we have some honest certainly attorneys, but unfortunately, most people simply go along with the system. It's a fraternity, and you try to fight it, and they'll take your license away. This is the way the system, unfortunately, works, and they take away your license, they take away your livelihood. Are you going to take, just standing on principle, are you going to risk everything? And most lawyers will not. They will not fight the system. Chuck, go right ahead.
Yeah, they're misleading the jury and they're breaking the law worse than the people that they're putting on trial. That's not a legal system. I would wonder what you call that. The police, they basically do what they're told. They'll say and do whatever it is they're told. And so, it's just a whole manipulation of, I don't understand it.
Well, I tell you what, that's what we're trying to do, and we're trying to draw people's attention to it, get them to go to this website and start thinking about it and talking about it. And we'll be doing more programs on this. I want to thank you very much for calling, Chuck. Is there anything else you wanted to say?
Yeah, I just...
Thought then. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295.
Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done. Get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today. 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap isn't just soap. It's a miracle.
Most men, when they reach 60 years of age, have urinary tract problems. They have to urinate frequently during the day, and they have to get up several times every night. What's the solution? Many men use a herbal product called Prostate Support. It contains saw palmetto and stinging thistle. It's available from Radio Liberty. Dr. Stan takes Prostate Support and recommends it. And thousands of men take Prostate Support every day because it relieves their urinary tract symptoms. If you would like to try Prostate Support, call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Once again, the telephone number for Prostate Support is 800-544-8927. And I suggest you call today.
So you finally decided to start taking a vitamin supplement. Those chewables and tablets are fine if you don't mind paying for something that is only absorbed about 4-6%. However, a liquid supplement can have a 90% absorption rate if you choose the right one. Youngevity offers a wide variety of liquid supplements with a 90% absorption rate or more. Beyond Tangy Tangerine may be the best one ever invented. It starts as a liquid, then is freeze-dried like those instant coffees into a crystal. Then all you have to do is add a couple of scoops to water. No refrigeration, no fuss, no mess. Not only do you get a complete multiple vitamin, Beyond Tangy Tangerine also has minerals, and it tastes fantastic. You'll want to drink it all day long. So the next time you reach for a vitamin supplement, reach for Beyond Tangy Tangerine from Youngevity. For more information or to order, call 1-800-991-8730. That's 1-800-991-8730 and ask about business opportunities.
Back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this evening is William Gregg, and we're talking about the legal system and, of course, the fact that there is a website out there where they actually talk about the problem and trying to mobilize people to doing something about it. Now, if you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question or comment on this issue, and it is a vitally important issue, and it's something we've only recently decided we were going to spend time talking about and certainly trying to dramatize and make people understand that when you destroy the system, the court system, the judicial system in a nation, you destroy the very soul of a nation. And I saw this in medicine. I mean, most doctors are wonderful people. They really want to do a good job. But when you try to fight the system, maybe you had an alternative treatment that was excellent. It really helped people. maybe it would treat cancer, or maybe it had to do with other issues of health. But when you began purporting this and you were different than other people, they would come after you. And I know certainly our good friend, Dr. Mark Geyer, who will be on with us sometime, I think probably next week. But Dr. Mark Geyer actually had an effective treatment for autism. He was using it, and basically they took away his license, his medical license, basically because he spoke out against the mercury in the vaccines and said that vaccines were dangerous for children. And they took away his license, his means of making a living. As punishment, you are not ever to challenge the system. That is how medicine worked. How I managed to survive, I will never know. I think God must have been looking after me, because I pointed out, of course, it was medicine that was created the AIDS epidemic. It was fostering the AIDS epidemic, was preventing effective treatment of the AIDS epidemic. And even though I had total opposition from the leaders of organized medicine, even though I eventually won the doctors of the House of Delegates, 450 physicians around my position, it didn't do any good, Sydney, because the hierarchy of organized medicine didn't want to stop the AIDS epidemic. As a result, almost 600,000 Americans have died. Certainly another million and 1.2 million are infected. They're going to die. Throughout the world, 30 or 40 million have died, simply because there are people within organized medicine who absolutely, well, they had an agenda. It was a population control agenda, but they could never tell people that. And I couldn't say it because I didn't understand it when I was in the midst of this. And the same thing, though, is so true with the legal profession today. And most lawyers really don't have the courage to stand up against the system, because it could be very, very costly to them personally, and because they could take away their license, and they would certainly then lose their opportunity for a livelihood. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Our guest is William Grigg. And William, what's this website? What does this website talk about? And how could people certainly learn from going to that website?
It's a very easy thing to do. Go to judicialreformnow.com. Once again, that's one word, judicialreformnow.com. And it has, as I mentioned, a platform, 10-point platform, talking about various reforms that should be. The most important one, I think, is the very first one, which talks about jury nullification, reinstituting, in other words, the actual role of the jury. There are a number of other important points that are addressed throughout this 10-point platform. I think that toward the end, you see a couple of practical steps that are, I think, more administrative details, but they are of great substance and great substantive import, one of which is the idea of opening up judicial proceedings except for certain family law related matters that might involve compromising the interests of children who are involved in custody disputes, things of that sort. But opening up judicial procedures to public inspection by broadcasting them on local public access stations, I think that's a wonderful idea, because we're supposed to have open trials. It's supposed to be public. The reason why they're supposed to be public, we're supposed to be able to see what's going on, to witness the administration of what these people are pleased to call justice, to evaluate it on its merits. We are inundated with propaganda on behalf of this so-called criminal justice system. It's impossible to watch primetime television, which, by the way, is, I think, something people should avoid, without finding yourself neck deep in police procedurals and courtroom dramas that are melodramatic and are appreciably less edifying than Perry Mason was a couple of generations ago. And people get a hackneyed and unreliable view of what actually takes place in the court system. To begin with, they come away with the impression that the people who administer this system are something in the neighborhood of infallible. That's manifestly not the case. And they come away with, I think, a somewhat sacralized view of the people who were, as I referred to them before, and some of the things that I've written, the berobed disposers of other people's lives and property. We should be looking upon judges and prosecutors with gimlet-eyed suspicion, as befits people who descended from colonists who were not overawed with the type of people who were enforcing British imperial law. And one of the things that this 10-point program refers to as a desperately needed reform has to do with the unfortunately collegial and chummy relationships that exist between judges and prosecutors with respect to ex parte communications. That is to say, a communication where one side has privileged access to a judge and the other side has denied it. It's a very commonplace thing, and this will be criminalized if the ambitions of the individual behind this reform movement materialize. He also talks about the idea of making it a Class D felony for judges to be in violation of their oaths of office. And that's something else that needs to be looked at, is the issue of judicial misbehavior, not merely the ideological variety that we're discussing here, where they perverted the administration of justice, but also commonplace, run-of-the-mill, ordinary corruption type of thing that results in judges misusing their office, not merely using it badly, but consciously misusing their office for personal enrichment or as favoritism to somebody with whom they have a relationship that would make it proper for them to recuse themselves. But these are some of the highlights.
I would simply comment on a recent case. A Supreme Court case is a perfect example. And basically, it was on the constitutionality of the Obamacare. And certainly, what the Obama administration was putting through the Obamacare, one thing they stressed was that they were not requesting taxes. The Obamacare was not going to impose taxes. These were simply fees that certainly were going to be imposed to bear the cost of this health care for the entire nation so that everybody would have health care insurance, and it could be regulated then from Washington, D.C. to make sure we had quality care. Well, then, of course, the case was taken to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court was pretty well split. Four said this is unconstitutional. The federal government, there's nothing in the Constitution that allows the federal government, to have anything to do with health care. We've got the Ninth and Tenth Amendment limiting the power of the federal government. The federal government has oversteps its bounds. And then you had the liberal element who said, but look, what we need to do is do something so that we can make sure people have health care. Health care is good. Who could be against health care? We want people to be healthy. And so there was a tied, and one person had to make the decision, and that was Justice Roberts. Now, there are many things about Justice Roberts' personal life that are very, very questionable, and I will not get into that. It's perhaps not appropriate for this, but let's put this way, he would be very susceptible to blackmail. And so Justice Roberts, having to make the decisions as to whether Obamacare was constitutional or not, said, well, basically, what Obamacare was a tax. And the federal government does have the ability to tax. Now, this is a total contrast. I mean, the Obama administration said it wasn't a tax. Mm-hmm. But Justice Roberts felt that it was a tax because, of course, the federal government had the right to impose taxes. Why it was perfectly all right then, Obamacare was certainly constitutional, even though his argument was entirely opposite that from the Obama administration. Why did he do that? Well, I suspect somebody put pressure on him. Just as we heard Justice Bartley the other evening, Justice Douglas Bartley, telling about how he was put under pressure by Tommy Thompson, the governor of Wisconsin, when he was on the bench there in Wisconsin. And ladies and gentlemen, if you don't think this sort of thing goes on, I think you're sadly, sadly mistaken. Judges will often do what they are told to do. If they want to keep their appointment, if they do not want to be attacked and vilified and exposed for perhaps some personal misconduct on their part. We see examples of this over and over again because people don't understand our Constitution, and there should have been an outcry from lawyers, whether they agree with Obamacare or not. Isn't Justice Roberts' decision was not made upon justice or right or wrong. It was a political decision because they wanted socialized medicine in America. Because without socialized medicine, we cannot control health care. And if we can't control health care, people are going to continue living indefinitely. The whole system will collapse. There's not enough money to finance Medicare. We're going to have to get rid of the elderly, as they do in Great Britain and many other countries, as they're already starting to do in the United States under the guise of comfort care. Go up on the internet and look up comfort care. It's a term that is increasingly being used in hospitals across America. It is simply a name for euthanasia being practiced in America today to make the system work. Go right ahead, William.
What you're describing, of course, is the curse of results-oriented jurisprudence at the appellate level, particularly in the Supreme Court, where the conceit is that the Supreme Court somehow is the cockpit which will steer great social changes. There's another really good example that's gestating right now, and that is the prospect of the Supreme Court rendering a ruling on this peculiar pseudo-institution called gay marriage. The idea is that the Supreme Court, as Mr. Dooley, the newspaper caricature, said, it follows the election return, and that means that the Constitution itself is written on the equivalent of an etch-a-sketch, and that every once in a while it will be shaken up and some new shape will emerge. The role of the Supreme Court is to read that new shape and impress it upon our laws so as to change our society in the direction of what it calls progress. That's not what the Supreme Court is supposed to do. The Supreme Court is supposed to adjudicate constitutional controversies among the states or between the states and the federal government. It's supposed to render decisions where it applies existing law. The precedents that the Supreme Court inscribes in law are supposed to be the law of the case and not the law of the land. If the Supreme Court is actually in the business of creating law, it's a legislative body. It cannot be a judicial body. All legislative power, and it's very limited, that is granted through the Constitution is invested in the legislature. But you have the Supreme Court, despite the fact that it frequently and chastely pronounces its intention not to deliver decisions on political questions, it does so all the time. That's one of the things that the Supreme Court does, and inferior courts in the federal system do so as well. At the level of trial courts, which you have, rather than opportunistic intervention on behalf of ideology, is something I am convinced that is governed primarily by considerations of profit. It is profitable to convict somebody and put them into the prison system, at least profitable for some people, certainly not profitable for the tax victim population, but for those who are tax feeders, this is a very profitable system. And that's one of the reasons why you have prisons that are filling up with people who've done no offense to any other human being, but have run afoul of some enactment, either legislative or administrative, that the government pretends is a valid law. Once again, the only check rein on that is the fully informed jury at this point. There are some other proposals there at judicialreformnow.com, which would make the process more transparent, which I think is worthwhile, and actually put the teeth of criminal sanctions into certain forms of judicial misbehavior. But really, the problems in our system, when we're talking about the administration of justice, all have to do with the role of the jury. And it's not enough that jurors be informed about their powers and rights and responsibilities when they carry out the function that they do in the court system. They have to have sufficient principled courage to do this in defiance of the system. Here in the state of Idaho, jurors are required to sign a document attesting that they will be bound by the judge's interpretation of the law. That's an invalid contract. You cannot force somebody to sign away his rights as a condition of exercising those rights. But that's something which is enforced in this state under penalty of perjury. Last week, almost exactly a week ago, I had the opportunity to back up against a wall, almost in a literal sense, the Attorney General of the state of Idaho, a rather unappealing specimen named Lawrence Wasdin, and rebuke him to his face for his attempt to put a 66-year-old retired nun in prison for 14 years because she had been a conscientious juror. This happened back in 2006. Carol Asher is the name of this heroic woman. She was one of two people on the jury who wasn't convinced that a young man had actually committed the offense of being in possession of a minuscule amount of methamphetamine because she was convinced that the search of the vehicle was illegal. The vehicle was locked. They had no probable cause. The police did not have any probable cause to enter the vehicle. The keys were in the hand of this young man. Two police officers wrestled him to the ground and forced the keys from his hand, searched the vehicle without a warrant, found methamphetamine that most likely did not belong to this young man because he did not own the vehicle. It was a company-owned vehicle. Many people used it. On the basis of this very slender and completely unconvincing evidence obtained through a patently illegal search, they were willing to put this young man away probably for 20 years. Carol Asher, in the sanctity of the jury room, expressed the opinion that the police should have answered questions about the constitutionality of the search. Those questions were submitted to the judge. The judge did not ask the questions, which he was required to do as part of the due process procedure. He paraphrased them and then dismissed them. And in the sanctity of the jury chamber, Carol Asher brought this up again. The jury foreman rebuked her, saying the judge has already ruled on that question. Carol Asher said, no, I answer to a higher authority than the judge. That authority begins with the Constitution. It's pretty clear this was an illegal search. And so she managed to hang the jury. Immediately after the jury being hung and the mistrial being declared, two members of that jury went to the prosecutor and tattled on Carol Asher, which is something they couldn't do because this took place.
You're not supposed to, everything that's done in the jury room is supposed to be sacrosanct.
Exactly.
And so, they violated the law right there. Now, did they arrest these people for violating the law?
Of course not. What they did was they sent the letters to Lawrence Wasdin, the attorney general, and then he put her on trial for felony perjury. And thankfully, this was dismissed because the judge at the evidentiary hearing decided that he couldn't use evidence that was procured in violation of jury confidentiality. But I, last week, once again, the first opportunity I had to talk to the man, I said, are you going to apologize to that woman for that abuse of discretion? He didn't remember the case. This could have been the most important thing to happen in the life of this 66-year-old woman. She could have been sent to prison for the rest of her life for acting as a conscientious juror. And this despicable functionary who presided over this atrocity doesn't even remember her name. He doesn't remember what he attempted to do to this woman. You know, God be praised that the prosecution didn't actually go forward, but the point is he was willing to do this. Because she had the temerity to do what the Constitution and the common law require that she do as a juror, force the government to prove its case. If they fail, vote to acquit the defendant.
And ladies and gentlemen, today, one in every 103 American adults is in prison, one in every 33 American adults is in prison, population or parole, one out of every three young black men, 21 to 31, is in prison, probation or parole today. What's wrong with the system? If you're not involved, why, you're part of the problem. We have an obligation to be involved, to bring these facts out, to point out that 97% of federal cases never go before a jury. They're settled by a plea. Why? Well, who'd want to go to jail for 400 years?
You already know that calcium is important. But did you know that calcium cannot be absorbed without magnesium? That's a fact. And the calcium that isn't absorbed calcifies your soft muscle tissues. Haven't you ever wondered what's really causing all your muscle aches? I'm Pat Sullivan, the founder of Jigsaw Health. I created Jigsaw Magnesium with SRT to solve my own magnesium deficiency problems. You see, magnesium helps people feel younger because magnesium keeps the soft tissues from calcifying. This helps you sleep better at night and feel more energized during the day. Call 888-352-5050 and we'll explain why Jigsaw Magnesium with sustained release technology is so much better than any drugstore magnesium supplement. Mention this radio ad and receive $5 off your order. 888-352-5050. JigsawMagnesium.com.
What has happened to the judicial system in these United States? From the Supreme Court to the smallest county seat, we've seen the judiciary make decisions which are more legislative than interpretive. The judicial system was designed to ensure that the laws of the land were just and constrained by our Constitution. Now judges have immunity and cannot be prosecuted when they act outside the law. This must stop. The judicial branch needs reform. We must pass laws which bring a renewed sense of justice to our nation's court system. I urge you to go to judicialreformnow.com. That's judicialreformnow.com. At that website, you can find out what's really going on in this area of lawlessness, and more importantly, you can find out what you can do to stem the tide of judicial malpractice. judicialreformnow.com. judicialreformnow.com.
Most men, when they reach 60 years of age, have urinary tract problems. They have to urinate frequently during the day, and they have to get up several times every night. What's the solution? Many men use a herbal product called Prostate Support. It contains saw palmetto and stinging thistle. It's available from Radio Liberty. Dr. Stan takes Prostate Support and recommends it. And thousands of men take Prostate Support every day because it relieves their urinary tract symptoms. If you would like to try Prostate Support, call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Once again, the telephone number for Prostate Support is 800-544-8927. and I suggest you call today.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. We do hope, of course, you enjoyed the conversation this evening with our friend William Grigg. The website to go to is judicialreformnow.com. Judicialreformnow.com. I'll go there, look and see what the website says, and take seriously consideration of what this involves. Now, before we let you go, William, I want you to tell our listeners how they can get to your website and how they can get to your PayPal button, because, of course, William does need help, and we personally, my family, helps William. We think he does a wonderful job. He also helps us by writing our monthly newsletter, and if you join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, you'll get William's newsletter. But right now, William, one question. Since we do need the December newsletter.
You'll be getting it tomorrow.
You've got a million things coming up, and if it doesn't get here until the first of next month, we'll understand. But under any circumstances, let's get information out, how people can get to your website, find your articles, and your PayPal button.
Dr. Stan, I really appreciate all your help. You've been a real blessing to me, and many of your listeners have been a blessing to me and my family as well. My website is called Pro Libertate. If you go to Google and type in Pro Libertate and Grigg, chances are that'll be the first return. Type in my name, William N. Grigg, and Pro Libertate will certainly be the first return. Freedominourtime.blogspot.com is the website. Freedominourtime.blogspot.com. As you mentioned, Dr. Stan, there is a PayPal button at the bottom of every essay. I want people to assess what I write before deciding whether or not they're going to lend their support, and many people have been very generous to us. The current essay was just published about an hour and a half or 2 hours ago. It's about Senator Barbara Boxer's perfectly insane proposal to use the National Guard as police to provide security at government schools. This is somebody who wants to have armed troops to protect the sanctity of gun-free zones. She doesn't see the contradiction because she's ideologically blinded and, of course, a fountain of the most perfect foolishness. But that's the most recent essay. There'll probably be two more essays published in the next couple of days. Pro Libertate is the name of the website. Freedominourtime.blogspot.com is the web address for Pro Libertate.
God bless. Thanks very much, William. We'll talk to you real soon.
God bless.
Okay. Well, this is Dr. Stan. The time I need to remind all of our listeners that my ministry is primarily listener-supported. Over 50 stations every week hear one or another of our programs. And right now, if you'd like to help us maintain that network, and we are reaching more and more people, why, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Some of the DVDs we have, certainly my interview with Ambassador Earl T. Smith, the American ambassador to Cuba at the time of the Cuban Revolution, when the United States government placed a known communist on the in the presidency in Cuba. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, Fidel Castro didn't win the revolution. We put him in power. You'll hear the story from the Ambassador Smith. Of course, he knew Fidel Castro was a communist. The president knew, the State Department knew, the CIA knew. The only people who didn't know were the American people. We put communists into power all over the world. I mean, we installed the communists in China back in 1949. If you want the documentation on that, you need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. You want to know the close relationship between David Rockefeller's daughters and Fidel Castro, and how Fidel Castro comes up to visit David. I tell him you need that book is called Memoirs by David Rockefeller. It's available from Radio Liberty. And then, of course, to understand how it all fits together, you need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. They're all available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. And then, once again, we're trying to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, published. And quite frankly, we need your help to do that. And if you're in a position to buy a case of the books, ordinarily the books $12.95, you get them for less than $3 a copy. Or if you get a case of them, you get 64. And then you can give them or you can sell them. But the important thing is that now you have a means of getting people to understand that all this talk about forces working behind the scenes is really true. And of course, what we cover, of course, is the spiritual nature of the battle in which we're engaged. And this is not imaginary. People have read the book. It's changed their lives. And it will help others to understand. If you'd like to get a copy of the book, or you'd like to get a case of the books and help Radio Liberty get it republished, And, of course, get a free four CD set or a DVD along with it. Our number 1-800-544-8927. But please pray. Pray for Radio Liberty, our provision and our protection.
As we raise our voices in a solemn prayer, God bless America, land that I love. Stand beside her.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, and that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality and not illusion or delusion that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of our good friend Bob Fletcher. And Bob sent me back, I guess, the early 1980s, or just before that, was running a toy business. He was a successful businessman. He had no idea, like most people out in America, that there were any other forces out there working behind the scenes. His business was doing well, and some man came to him and offered to buy out or buy half the company, and they were going to make a lot of money, and he really tremendous advantage to expanding the business. And Bob, oh, well, foolishly agreed to that. I think we all sometimes certainly can be taken in. Apparently, this man was a very, very professional, very, very convincing. And what Bob did not understand is that this gentleman was going to take over his business so that it could be used by the CIA to smuggle weapons as part of the Iran-Contra scandal. And, of course, that, of course, set off a series of events that has led Bob now, well over 30 years later. He is a successful television producer. He's produced a lot of DVDs that we carry. They're very important and will help you better to understand what is going on in the world today. Now, Bob Sidney is retired from the toy business. The toy business, of course, he lost because of the CIA. Well, you don't. One thing I can tell you, ladies and gentlemen, don't go into business with undercover CIA agent. It could cost you. It could cost you your business. It could cost you your money. It could cost you your life because these people play for keeps. Bob Fletcher, thanks for being with us.
Hi, thank you, Stan.
Did I tell the story pretty well?
Yeah, I guess so. I guess I sort of had to defend myself a little bit because I know you make reference into quote unquote sort of foolishly getting into it, and of course I actually did due diligence. He had two or three very successful businesses, this particular gentleman. But all of the businesses he had in reality were covert fronts, and there's no way that you can go to the yellow pages and check that out, and there's no way you can, find out, that if in fact somebody happens to be a covert supplier of weapons, which is how he described himself, later on when I found out what he was doing, and it's amazing because, you know, these characters, they're given carte blanche by the covert government side of things, so that if they're carrying out secret operations on the left hand, whatever they have to do on the right hand to accomplish that, they're given pretty much a free ticket to do whatever they want to, which includes any kind of criminal activities. Because what happens should they get caught carrying out something that may be criminal, like in my case, just plain stealing my business and taking advantage of me, and of course he tried to recruit me as well. But if, in fact, they get caught doing something criminal in any manner at all, they simply classify all of the surrounding information, all the people involved, all the banking involved, they classify it as top secret in connection with whatever they were supposed to be doing covertly for the government. So they can pretty much get away with whatever they want to, and you can't do anything.
And basically, I've heard this almost identical stories from other people who've been trapped in the system. I wasn't being critical, Bob.
Suddenly, oh, no.
I think I'm just glad that you came out of it alive, because a lot of people who get into this sort of a situation don't come out of it alive. There really are wicked and evil people working for the invisible government, ladies and gentlemen, the secret government that really runs America today. Bob, you go right ahead with the story.
Right. Well, and of course, the big, for me, it was simply an unbelievable heads up, and I was overwhelmed. I couldn't believe what was taking place, and I couldn't believe that the amount of secrecy involved, where the government themselves, in the covert side of things, they simply stamp whatever they have to top secret, and you can't go anyplace with it. It's all over. Once they do that, even if you're in the middle, which I ended up being, in the middle of a legal action to simply get my business back or even be paid properly for it, basically had stolen and had not paid for it yet and had taken possession of all of my goods, et cetera, et cetera. And I thought it was going to be easy because I had a very clear black and white contract with his corporation, my corporation with his corporation. But once they decide, once they just stamp what he was doing as being secret, well, you can't go anyplace, and the courts can't hear it, period. They won't look at it. I mean, the government just comes in and just says, hey, listen, this involves covert operations that cannot be discussed, so you cannot listen to this case. And they just pat me on the back and turn me around and tell me, go start up again. So the fact that I had lost my business and everything else, like you say, fortunately I hadn't lost my life, because there are a lot of folks that had in those situations, especially if they turn out to be like I am, and that is, I became a whistleblower, and I didn't keep my mouth shut, and I got in the middle of being a witness for several major inquiries out of the Senate and the Congress, and of course, I was to find out later on that, of course, it just keeps going on uphill in terms of who is involved, so again, nothing really happens, so that even when you see an investigation at a congressional or a senatorial level of any sort, and as example right now would be the State Department inquiries into their situation with this ambassador that was killed.
Benghazi, it can be one great big whitewash.
Yes.
Anytime you have the government investigating the government, you're never going to get to the truth any more than certainly Senator Joe Biden is going to come up with an objective analysis of what should be done, to prevent further gun violence. The decisions are made ahead of time. The investigations are put on to get ready to whitewash the situation and to allay the apprehension of the people. We saw it with the Warren Commission. We saw the 911 investigation. It's all smoke and mirrors, ladies and gentlemen. It's all fol-de-rol. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's Bob Fletcher, and we've just talked about his tragic situation. He lost his business, and of course, when he tried to take the case to court, they said, well, this is all top secret. It's top secret. It's been declared certainly cannot be discussed in court. None of the information can be brought out because it's been declared top secret. Sorry you lost your business, but of course, well, I'm sure they just go right ahead with your life. And Bob didn't. He actually became a whistleblower. He got involved in other government investigations. And they have these government investigations all the time. We're having one on Benghazi, you know, and Sydney. But it's all whitewash. I mean, you're never going to get the truth anymore than you're going to get the truth on what happened to President Kennedy, the Kennedy evaluation, certainly the 9-1-1 commission examination. In fact, of course, if you go to the background of the Kennedy assassination, almost half of the people on that Kennedy Warren Commission came from the Council on Foreign Relations. We had the 9-1-1 commission. Half the people there came from the Council on Foreign Relations. There's just a little clique, and they cover for one another all the time. Thomas Keene, who is the director of the 9-1-1 Commission, came from the Council on Foreign Relations. Lee Hamilton, who is the vice chairman of the 9-1-1 Commission, came from this Council on Foreign Relations and the Trilateral Commission. It's all an inside job. And you're not going to get the truth. That's why I do what I do. And fortunately, we have people like Bob, who's been certainly studying this for the last 30 years. Tremendous knowledge. Well, Bob, we were going to, I don't want to get tied up in the past sure. so much as we wanted to talk about some of the things going on today. So I'm going to let you pick up the story and run with it.
Okay. Well, because of doing all the variety of investigations I've gotten involved with, and because so many of the same people always involved to different operations, I did, in fact, end up being involved with many inquiries and assisting senators and congressmen and what have you. And but I became, of course, aware, and having my finger in many pies always at any given time, I was always pretty much had an open file cabinet and had a lot of things that I realized were crossing, you know, where A and B would cross with C and D and be the same guys or different guys in the same operation and what have you. And I was, of course, constantly aware of the criminal activities, what I call it anyhow, the movement of money and the disappearance of funds at a very high level, you know, where large bureaucratic funding, millions and millions of dollars, where a certain amount of it would disappear, or it would be disappear one place, and of course it was being applied, this disappearance or altering the books or what have you, would be applied to some other covert operation someplace down the line. And all of a sudden it dawned on me a few years ago, in the midst of doing several different things, that it was starting to get to be huge amounts of money. I was used to seeing a couple million here, a couple million there, disappearing, and little investigations, and nothing, like we say, ever comes of it. And they never would locate the money, and that would be the end of it. And there was always something else would pop up that would be a bigger deal than the smaller loss of $10, $20, $30 million. And so I started snooping into it. I was trying to think of how, when I saw Mr. Rumsfeld, who was in charge of the Department of Defense for several years, and I saw him testify, and that he sort of in a lighthearted manner, although he was totally serious, the day before the actual Twin Towers situation in New York, he came forward at a Senate inquiry, and he said, we've apparently lost about $3.2 trillion. And, you know, and when I saw that, I was reviewing the videotapes on that, and I had to run that back again, make sure I understood what he had said. And he said that they had, at the Defense Department, they were unable to track what amounted to about $3.2 trillion. And then I got thinking, if that kind of money, even if it was spread out over 10 years, see, now we're really talking gigantic funds. And I thought to myself, where, how in the world, how would that disappear? And how could you ever launder that? Because I had been involved watching and investigating major multi-million dollar theft and movement of money. A lot of times it's not what I would call an outright theft. It's a movement of funds from one thing to another. But I couldn't figure out what in the world, how could you move that much money, even over 10 years? And then it dawned on me, I had something else that was laying on my desk, so to speak. and that was the discovery of underground facilities that were being built, constructed, reconstructed, enhanced. So these were what you might refer to as bomb shelters, like the NORAD location in the middle of the Granite Mountains in Colorado, at these locations. But they were building these like huge amounts. And
yeah, basically, these are almost like underground cities, aren't they?
Yes, literally.
And ladies and gentlemen, yes. This may sound pretty far out, but I've talked to people who really investigated this, and a friend of mine who's Sydney had a newspaper editor up in Napa, Sonoma, and he actually hiked in, snuck in someplace up there in the wilderness around in a wilderness area around Santa Rosa, where all these helicopters were flying in. You couldn't get in. There were no roads in. So he had to just hike through a lot of difficult territory, but he got there, and here's this massive underground cave system. A large crew is building this cave up there in Northern California, and basically Jesse Ventura has investigated this. I know there was a gentleman, he was a PhD, and he investigated this. He wrote a couple of books about these underground tunnels and caves and caverns. They destroyed him. The last thing I heard, he was working as a window washer somewhere down in Arizona, New Mexico. Sidney Allen, Alex Jones is investigated this, certainly Jesse Ventura's investigated it. This is not imaginary. It is real. So go right ahead, Bob. As incredible as it seems, somebody is building these underground facilities. People of great wealth, they have them, certainly for the people back in Washington, D.C., when the event occurs. The only trouble is we don't know what the event is, but go ahead.
Right. So I just kept expanding this, and now I'm going back a couple of years ago. Actually, it goes back to 94, 95. So that's quite a while back when I was receiving photographs from guys that were saying, hey, I'm a truck driver and I had a contract to do this and do that. And I went to a location and the side of the mountain opened up and I drove inside and they closed it up behind me. And again, like you said, I thought, wow, this guy has really been, he's having a couple too many strong drinks or something. But I kept getting the same story over and over again from a lot of people, and they were sending me photographs and what have you. And then I was told also that underneath the location where they had the big Denver airport, that was a giant underground secret facility, and how they had, in fact, laid down this gigantic airstrip, landing strip at one place, and then just quietly covered it up with 6 or 8 inches of dirt, and went ahead and built other strips to use, but they just covered this one really big one, just covered it up, and that underneath the airport was this huge maze of tunneling that connected off into several different directions. So when that particular airport was completed in 95, I snuck down there myself. I went in with a friend and actually was able to get in down underground and jumped on a tram that was running down there and actually was moving workers about down there, and I just jumped on with a camera and made like I was supposed to be there, and I was able to see that it was in fact a huge underground facility, and then of course upstairs they were utilizing the airport as a regular airport, but underneath is a whole different story. Now, that was back in 95. Just a few months ago, Jesse Ventura loaded his guys up, and they went down, and, well, they found the same thing that I had found out in back in 95, and they are still working on it. Now, that's one pretty big project, since up on the top, nothing seems to have changed much, but down underneath, they're still doing whatever they're doing. So, again, it was just one little part, one leg to this whole thing. So I kept looking and expanding my investigation and having people send things to me, et cetera. And I finally pretty much what ended up being is that we were, in fact, or had, in fact, completed as many as possibly 100 underground facilities. They're all at different sizes. They're different locations. Some of them are, like you said, as big as a city. Several of them, which we have photographs of, are big enough for 18-wheeler trucks to have to stop at intersections to avoid running into each other. You know, now you got to put that into your thinking cap there for a second in terms of how big we're talking about. Several of these are most recently, the NORAD facility in the Granite Mountain there in Cheyenne had been shut down for all intents and purposes for its original use. They've moved everything to Edwards Air Force Base in California and are using that space over there to do what NORAD usually did, and that is keep track of what's going on in our airspace. And in the old one, they're moving in and, of course, redoing and converting it into another one of these underground facilities.
And so, I think it's important for people to say, well, if this is going on, why aren't we hearing about it? Well, if you work for the government, you sign a secrecy agreement. And if you ever reveal anything, they will come after you. They'll send you to prison. And you're told you'll go to Leavenworth, or as some people have maybe been told, or worse. And they know what that means. That means they could very well be killed. I've actually, you can hear my interview with a fellow who was on the USS Liberty who was told if he ever told what really happened on the attack on the USS Liberty, he'd be sent to Leavenworth or worse. And he said, I knew what they meant. I knew they were going to kill me. And for 20 years, he and the other people were afraid to talk. Today, most people are afraid to talk. Go right ahead, Bob.
Well, so, again, I kept pursuing and trying to expand this because it dawned on me. And by the way, I also found out that in other foreign countries all around the world, this same type of projects were going on. And there was entire changes and shifts in financial support for different things. Our what I would call our external space programs was radically shut down and changed and altered. You know, now I'm talking about a period of time going backwards here as much as 20 or 30 years because it all was coming clear, it was interfacing. And what of course became clear to me that something had scared the guys at the very highest levels of our government and other governments. Something was bothering them above and beyond the normal conflict between nations. And also, I must say, we were interfacing secretly, not overtly, not out in front of the public, but we were cooperating with Russia and China and other nations that it appeared externally that we were in constant competition, but in reality, we were cooperating between each other. So I started snooping again and trying to, you have to really have an open mind because the amount of secrecy now developed over, oh, I'm going to say 60, 70 years, has become outrageous. We live in a country where we actually think that we get information. We think that the government keeps us informed as to what's happening and what's going on. And I got bad news. We don't get any more information, maybe a tiny bit more than some of the biggest communist dictators in the world. Our information in terms of what's really good information is totally filtered and like I say, stamped secret very easily. And again, recently we've had Obama passed an expanded executive order capacity about 1 year, maybe a year and a half ago, that basically said that anything that he decides at the presidential office, that it should be made kept from the public, it should be converted into secrecy, that he has the ability to do it without going through a Senate and Congress and all those normal methods by which these things have to take place. So that's all been changed now. So he can simply stamp it, say, I don't want to put this out. That's secret under executive order so-and-so, and that's the end of it. So it's really harder to get information than you might think. And I must add, we falsely assume that senators and congressmen know what's going on. So we think, oh, well, this guy that represents my district, he's going to protect me from anything that's not being done properly. Now, and that's baloney because it's a small number of people in the Senate and the Congress that are given secret or top secret clearances. So they don't know what's going on. So the idea that you could contact them and say, gee, I think they're building, I think they're dropping $57 million up the road in a big hole down here. You know, can you check it out? And he'll say, oh, sure. And then that's the end of that. The next letter you get from your congressman is a request for you to vote for him again next season, and you never get an answer to your
question.
Hold
that thought. Hold the thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly Bob is talking, is talking about certainly the fact that so much goes on in America that is secret, and you're never going, of course, to get to the bottom of it, and unless, of course, you have certainly access to people who've done the research, and certainly we do know people who've done the research, and the information is there, and there are books, certainly there are actually groups that actually publish books that tell you this information, but you're not going to get them through regular channels. So we were simply talking about these underground facilities. They're there. Certainly the people in charge know something big is going to happen. Now, I'm not suggesting it's going to happen tomorrow, but we don't know when it's going to happen, and we don't know necessarily what it's going to be. Could it be an EMP attack? Could it be a comet hitting America? Could it certainly be a solar flare? Certainly a solar flare, a solar storm could do just exactly what an electromagnetic pulse attack could do. Could it be a coming war or a coming famine or certainly a coming epidemic of some sort? Could it be the breakdown of civilized society as we know it? We see the beginnings of that certainly as the increased crimes and shootings. But go right ahead, Bob. What are your thoughts?
Well, so I'm sitting here and I say, okay, what do we have? We have huge amounts of money being siphoned off from a variety of directions. So I put out some feelers, try to get a handle on where it might really be going. Obviously, then we discovered several of these underground facilities. And, of course, also we sent money. Remember, they had the banking crisis, right? It was worldwide. We sent millions and millions, and I have to say billions of dollars over to other nations during the quote-unquote banking crisis. Of a couple of years ago, and 2008, particularly in that period of time. Then I see, I'm again reviewing congressional hearings, and I see where the lady that's in charge of dispersing those funds overseas, mostly American taxpayers' dollars, she's saying the same kind of thing that Rumsfeld had said, and that is she said that she didn't know for sure. They couldn't tell the Senate and the Congress what banks overseas got the money. She didn't know exactly how much it was. She didn't know when they were supposed to pay it back. Didn't know if they had to pay it back and how much interest was supposed to be charged on it. So I said, whoa, wait a minute. There we go again. There's another a couple of truckloads of money that just went someplace, and it's vanished. You know, these they're telling us, you know, with a straight face that they don't know where it really is. And of course, they always say, we'll look into it and get back to you. I never seen anybody get back to anybody when they said that at the Senate and congressional inquiry.
Well, let me just tell you, it reported here in this last two or three days that the American government is going to sell its stock in General Motors. Basically, of course, when we had the General Motors crisis, it bought about, I think they gave General Motors something like, oh, $50 or $60 billion. And they bought the General Motors stock at $57 a share. So now General Motors is really doing pretty well, and General Motors wants to buy the stock back that the American government had bought from General Motors at $55, $57 a share. And General Motors is going to pay $27 a share to get back the stocks that we paid $57 for, and we're going to go right ahead and sell them 300 million shares, something like that. Anyway, of course, the way it looks like, well, the American government, when it gets sold all of the stock that we bought in General Motors to rescue them, we're only going to lose about $20 to $25 billion. Why are we giving $25 billion to General Motors? Why? Because it's going to make lots of profits. They can give lots of big bonuses. They can pay large dividends. from the American taxpayers. Why would you do something like that? Why, for the same reason it would steal all sorts of money, transferring it from the American taxpayers to the major corporations. And you can find those articles in the last two or three days in the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal. Read it and weep. This is the way the world really runs. Who runs our government? Not our elected representatives, but the Brotherhood of Darkness, of which General Motors is a major part. Go right ahead.
Right. And again, that's, you know, that's a perfect example. And it's probably, there's much more in you and I would really be amazed if we knew all of story there. There's a lot more in there someplace that we're missing, but we're never going to know. So I guess it's something that you just don't want to waste time on. But so to move forward though, I had this realization that we have, all of this money's vanishing and probably going into, certainly a huge amount of it going into the underground facilities. So the next question arises, and that is, what is it that is so scary for these people that they, instead of just stealing it for themselves and putting it in offshore banks, they're putting it in holes in the ground?
Hold that thought, Bob. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Bob Fletcher. But listen to the questions he's asking.
While the storm clouds gather far across the sea, let us swear allegiance to a land that's free. Let us all be grateful for a land so fair. As we raise our voices in a solemn prayer.
Well, Bob, you go right ahead.
Well, and we started continuing. So it's just a matter, it's almost like a puzzle, you know. It's like, all right, so we got a few bits and pieces of the puzzle. It looks like the money, huge amounts going here and there and there. And then also we can't forget the fact that we have no idea if there is one $20 gold piece left in the put away in Fort Knox. We have been unable to get an audit or even be able to go into the Fort Knox facility and find out if there's any gold left in Fort Knox at all. We have no idea. It's been, I believe, 1947 was the last serious inventory. And even at that, you really don't know. They opened the doors and showed it to a few people. They showed them, what do you show them? What, one room full of gold bullion and tell them how much is in there? I guess that's what happens. Nobody ever even checks to find out if, in fact, that was real gold. So the bottom line is, because there was, matter of fact, there was an interesting story written several years ago that said that truckloads of gold were taken out of Fort Knox, a whole string of trucks carried out. Well, they went in and came out, and the assumption was that they had removed gold. But we don't know, sitting here today, if there is $1.37 left in the Fort Knox. So we just put that aside. But it's something that, because we're looking at all the rest of this money disappearing in huge amounts, you have to look and say, I wonder if there's anything left in there. So then I did a little more snooping, and we found out, because they had something that is obvious, was that they had built in Denmark, Sweden area, huge seed vaults. Now, these are like Noah's Ark. These are vaults for holding billions of seeds. They've been gone over by experts, all the seeds.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, Bob is talking about all this money that's disappearing. And then, of course, there have been a lot of stories about multiple big fleets of trucks going into Fort Knox where the gold is supposedly stored, and then the trucks come out loaded with something. And the question is, did they take the gold out at Fort Knox? We don't know. Suddenly, Congressman Ron Paul has been trying to get an independent audit of the gold in Fort Knox for many years, and the government says, no, nobody can audit it. You just have to trust us. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we have a visible government. We have an invisible government. And they're the people who really run the things. You tie into the Federal Reserve, which is a privately owned central bank owned by the central banks, part of the secret cabal that certainly David Rockefeller describes in his memoirs. And we have his book, his memoirs. You can read it on page 405, where he said, you know, they think that we are part of a secret cabal working against the best interests of the United States and saying that my family and I are conspiring with others around the world to bring a more integrated global political and economic system. One world, if you will, and if that's the charge, I am guilty and I'm proud of it. Those are his words, not mine. He's part of a secret cabal working against the best interests of the United States, conspiring with others around the world to create a more global political and economic system. One world, if you will. Those are his words, not mine. Understand, you can read them in David Rockefeller's memoirs. You can get that from my ministry or order it from Amazon. I don't care. But get the information. Understand. Something big is going on behind the scenes. There is a secret cabal that runs the world, ties into the CFR, the Bilderbergers, the Council on Economic, pardon me, the Royal Institute for International Affairs, Council on Foreign Relations, the Club of Rome, the central banks. They're all tied in together, and they're the ones who control our treasury. They're the ones who control the gold. And where is the gold? We don't know. And nobody's allowed to see it. Go right ahead, Bob.
Yes, as a matter of fact, we've had testimony from some of those that oversee the financials, and they actually said that, as far as they were concerned, the Federal Reserve System, that they had successfully set it up in a manner such that they are not responsible to answer to anyone's questions whatsoever. They actually have stated that on the floor of the Senate, the Congress, and that that they will answer what they want and they will not answer what they don't want. So I guess that sort of tells us where we are, and they have our money, and they're not going to tell us if, in fact, it's there or not any longer. So now I'm looking at all of the like you say, little bits of puzzle, and I'm getting information from all over the world, actually. And that includes, of course, what we just mentioned there, the seed vault with billions of seeds put away in a manner such that if there were a catastrophe, some kind of a global disaster, like Noah's floods, if you will, something of that sort over again, that we would have the ability to, whoever might survive. Now, this is important now. Whoever might survive could, of course, replant and get things started again. So now you say, well, wait a minute. Yeah, who might survive?
Well, let me just comment. You can find this information up on the Internet. Just go to your global search engine, put in Doomsday Seed Vault. Doomsday Seed Vault, you'll find it's absolutely true. They have these seed vaults there. They're up about 600 miles from the North Pole, and they're there, so they will have the seeds to use when they start in all over again. Go ahead.
Yeah, and this vault is very good of a representative or duplicate to at least the entrance anyhow, well, and even the interior of the underground facilities that I was talking about that had cost so much, that's been constructed for so many years on a continuing basis. So here we get back to the statement I made, and that is, for those that would survive, they would be able to come back out of their holes, wherever they might be, and replant, get things started again, if there was enough left on Earth, if, in fact, it was some kind of a huge disaster. So now, since they have told us about the seed vault, that's out in front, And we do know that they have underground facilities. You know, they're not telling us much, but we do know that they have them. And matter of fact, my information is probably between 90 and 100 of these, not counting any that might be in other countries. So then I found out that in Russia, oh, about 2 years ago, all of a sudden they put out a mandate that they were going to construct 5,000 underground facilities, the equivalent of bomb shelters, all over in a variety of locations. But their intent was to have 5,000 of them done by today, by the year 2012, and particularly by November or December. So now this is ringing a bell, of course, for everybody as soon as I said that, because it's all of a sudden it comes up with, oh, wow, this fits in to the all the predictions of the Mayans, the Sumerians, Edgar Casey, a woman named Mother Shipton, and Nostradamus, and all of these people that had predicted some kind of a holocaustic situation potentially taking place in December. As a matter of fact, tomorrow has been the big date that's been flashing in our faces now for a long time, many, many years. And when you go back, the reality is it's the end of what is the Mayan calendar, and they physically had said that things were going to come to an end tomorrow, as of the 21st of December, 2012. Now, that is the reality of what scared these people so much, that they're taking all of our money and dumping it into these holes, and these are hideouts for the elite to preserve continuity of the wealthiest. And that's what we're looking at. That is what I, in my opinion, think has happened. I think these people have had some type of a scientific verification that between, I'm going to say tomorrow, which has been this magical date, sometime between tomorrow and the next 2 years, that we will potentially have some kind of a holocaustic event take place, and it will constitute the need for those guys that have the tickets in their pockets to go underground into these facilities and attempt to survive.
Well, you know, there's all sorts of things that could happen. Certainly there are talk about a dark comet, and there are such things you just can't see them until they're almost upon you. And there have been comets that have hit America in the past and or hit the world in the past that said that this is what killed the dinosaurs. Now, I don't think so, but there have been massive comet hits and then, of course, massive deaths. And it simply blacks out the sun for a year or two. And the same thing with massive volcanoes. Certainly, if you get a massive volcano or a series of them, you would have so much dust you wouldn't see the sun, and you wouldn't be able to have crops. There are all these natural events, certainly. A solar storm like they had back in 1859 that locked out all of the telegraph systems all across America, 1859, one of those would knock out our major grids today. All of these things are certainly possible. Go right ahead.
And again, this is my belief after looking at all of the possibilities and, of course, getting information from a million directions, and that is that there has been a sufficient verification to the minds of those guys that have their hands on the purse strings, or they got the money to do what they want to. That's our money. And that under the continuity of government programs, which has been expanded tremendously over and over again in like 10-year increments, particularly since the 60s, that this continuity of government is all top secret, and theoretically it was originally created on the basis that we may have an atomic attack, and therefore they had to make set up systems by which certain people, of course, would be able to survive that and come back from under their under the ground and come out and rebuild America. That would be the legitimate simplistic kind of a reason for all of this. But it has, like I say, expanded to where it's all top secret. We've been watching multi-millions of bullets, ammunition being purchased by bureaucracies all over the United States that have no reason to even have bullets. We're talking millions of them being ordered up, and we also have, of course,
1.6 billion rounds of ammunition. Why would the Obama administration buy 1.6 billion rounds of ammunition and have, well, the CDC would buy, you know, a few million rounds, and the Forestry Service would buy 50 or 100 million rounds. It came to 1.6 billion rounds of ammunition. Go right ahead, Bob.
Yeah, and so, again, obviously it's one of those things, you know, you have to say, well, you know, what's going on? So now we have underground facilities, money disappearing to support those, creating them. We have a variety of changes in executive orders on a regular basis, moving up to a point where at the swipe of a pen, the president's going to be able to declare any kind of an emergency they want. He just has to think he's going to have a bad day, and he can declare an emergency. And so I looked at it again, trying to find out, you know, is there any scientific basis for the possibility of particularly what's been talked about so much. We do have, of course, the solar flare situation, which could really be devastating. They are watching an increase in solar activities and all of that. With our system the way it is now, it's all based on electronics. A few good electromagnetic bursts from the sun and could shut down our electronic world, that's for sure. And, of course, what would follow would be riots, would be out-of-control chaos in the streets. Even the possible verification of any kind of an outside, like you said, possibly a meteor or something, would cause, of course, chaos that would be uncontrollable. So on one hand, you know, if you were in government yourself and you were, let's pretend you were honest, you know, which is what you'd have to be at this point, something that's almost a pretend person. But if you were in government at the highest level, and you knew that something was going to take place that was astronomical in content, you couldn't tell everybody. You could not tell the public. Unfortunately, I think that's a truism. You just couldn't do it. If you just told people, hey, listen, 6 months down the road, something's going to come in and hit us, or some event we know scientifically it's going to take place, lots of luck. They couldn't do that, and we understand that. But I'm not sure if they did know something of this type, what is their obligation to the general public?
Well, you know, it's really very interesting. I just certainly finished reading a book called Resurrect, written by a naval pilot, retired. Certainly he has the knowledge that is available to high officers within the Navy. And it's all about a comet coming and hitting America, and of course the efforts to deflect that comet and what could be done to prevent the catastrophic events of a comet hitting in the United States. I just finished reading another book called One Second After. And, of course, it's the story of what happens with an EMP attack. These people, obviously, the people who fellow wrote the book on the EMP attack, as high contacts in Washington, D.C., that are frightened to death at the prospect. So here are two things. The book's out trying to warn the American people. Now, why, if there's a real problem, wouldn't they come forward? Because if they told the American people the truth, there would be panic, certainly there would be chaos in our streets. So they cannot tell the American people because they know it would lead to a total disruption of society. But these books are out there. One is called Resurrect. The other is called One Second After. but they simply give you the idea that there are people highly placed in government who are at least considering these two possibilities, either a comet hitting America and or an EMP attack and or a solar flare. But in the case as far as the EMP attack, it was certainly either Iran or Venezuela or North Korea that totally disrupted America. Nobody could even find out what had happened because missiles that carried the nuclear warheads that destroyed the infrastructure of America were set off by ships, one in the Gulf of Mexico, one on the East Coast, one on the West Coast, and then immediately after the missiles went up, the ships were sunk. No evidence of who had done it, and America was devastated. And within a year, 90% of the population was dead. Go right ahead.
Well, as I got looking into it, again, I was looking at, because I've always been a real stickler in any of my investigations that I've done, you know, like with Sonny Bono's murder, I never got into completing my DVD on that until I could get my hands on his autopsy. I knew that in my mind, I was positive he had been murdered. I knew even who had done it and all the rest of that, as far as I was concerned. But not until I got the black and white autopsy that I went ahead and completed the DVD that people can get if they're interested from myself.
Why don't you go ahead and tell people how to get your material?
Well, if you go on go on up and just Google BobFletcherInvestigations.com. It's BobFletcherInvestigations.com. That'll put you to my website, and we have 8 of our great, really good investigations with all kinds of documentation on everything. And it's very interesting. I would love to have you, if you haven't gone there yet, look that up and go from there.
They're excellent DVDs. They really are. Go right ahead, Bob.
And what we had done, I started doing some, you know, it's real difficult to get information about this kind of stuff because this is really held at the highest of top secret. But sometimes there's things that are out there that you actually can find out. And I discovered that the guy who ran the United States Navy astronomical telescopes and all of that, the guy who was in charge of it a few years back, had in fact discovered and found that planet X that everybody's worried about. And his name was Robert Harrington. Just before he could do a complete final report, he died mysteriously.
Died mysteriously. Well, that happens so often. Go ahead.
So we had, I had discovered an interview that he actually did on video with a Dr. Sitchin, who was a fellow who
had... Hold the thought. Bob, go right ahead.
Well, Dr. Sitchin, a few years ago, had discovered actually diaries of done by the Sumerian leadership. We're talking 4,000 years before Christ. We're talking way, way back. Unbelievable. That was some of the first writings of mankind. And when he finished deciphering all of these clay tablets, which were in reality like a diary done in a first person, he found out, according to their writings, that in fact there was a planet X. They call it planet X because technically it's Roman numeral for the number 10 planet. So this planet that has this huge, wide, circular orbit, part of our own solar system, but out so far that it takes over 3,000 years to pass, to make its circle, make a one complete orbit. And it runs in an opposite direction of all the rest of our planets within the solar system. But he had discovered this, and of course everybody, I mean, now, when, they just said, oh, this guy's really crazy. So for several years, the scientific community wouldn't even give him the time of day, which of course is nature of things. But this Robert Harrington, in charge of the Naval Astronomy Division for the U.S. Navy, had 15 years, he had been searching trying to figure out what it was that was affecting some of the planets at way, way out in our solar system. And he came, finally, he said, we found it, and we agree with you that this is absolutely a real object. It's a real planet. It's probably 2 to 5 times the size of Earth, and that it will be swinging back through again. Well, around this same period of time was when a lot of financial things and crazy stuff started taking place in our government, and my feeling is, along with other proof at this point in time, my feeling is that that is the primary concern by the government at the highest level, and that's why they're going underground as we speak, and why they're putting in the seed vault, which is, of course, a done deal, that's completed, and why they're digging into the sides of mountains to put these particular hideouts together for the highest level of the elite. And as far as I'm concerned, and being a very cautious investigator, I believe that I has hit the
nail. Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Bob really believes, of course, that it's this Planet X that the people in positions of power are afraid of, and this is why they're making the preparations for a very, very difficult time, because they believe that Planet X is going to at least come not too far away from America, and it's going to totally disrupt life here on Earth. Would that be a fair estimate, Bob?
Yes, it sure would.
Well, we're going to have to cover this some other time, because we've run out of time, but fascinating information. I can hardly wait for you to get your final proof of your latest video. When will that be available?
Oh, gosh. And like I told you earlier, I've just been going crazy to try. I've had so many difficulties accomplishing, but I'm hoping to get it done very soon.
Okay, God bless. We'll talk to you real soon. Thanks so much, Bob.
Thank you.
Have a wonderful, wonderful Christmas.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, fine. That was Bob Fletcher, a good friend. And basically, whether it's Planet X or whether it's a comet or an EMP attack or whatever it is, something big is coming. And you and I are not privy to it, but you need to understand what's going on. Certainly, if you'd like to see the talk that Ambassador Henry Cooper gave at our recent conference on the 21st of October, it's called The Threat of an EMP Attack. That is available on DVD now. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, and when we send it out, we'll send along a copy of the Heritage Foundation treatise on this. The Heritage Foundation, two PhDs, have written a treatise on the EMP attack and verify everything that Ambassador Cooper has said. And certainly we've talked to other people in Washington, D.C., and they validate his position. We don't know if this is what lies ahead, but something big is out there and is coming down the line. And then, of course, we believe behind everything going on are powerful spiritual forces. If you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to. You can get it by calling 1-800-544-8927. And if you have any question about what's really going on, why the United States, for instance, would install a communist government in China after the World War II, or why certainly American corporations would finance the Nazis during World War II, or certainly why things are happening as they are today, you really need to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. It'll connect the dots for you, and you'll never look at the world through the same eyes again. You can also get a case of the books, and it will help us if you do. For you, $150, you can get a case of Brotherhood of Darkness. That's less than $3 a copy for the books. You can sell them. You can give them away. You can influence people's lives. You get a couple of your friends to go along and come in with you if you need to, but it'll help us to get the book republished. It will help you, and not only that, you'll get a free 4-CD set, a 4-tape set, or free DVD if you get it, and we'll get that off to you right away. We will not bill you until actually the book is being printed, but our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Let me suggest some of the DVDs we have. Oh, we have so many wonderful ones. You can certainly see them all listed on our website or get a catalog. And just call 800-544-8927 and request a catalog. But you need to see my talk on the World Revolution. And there we'll include my interview with Ambassador Earl Smith. He will tell you how we brought Fidel Castro to power. He didn't win the revolution. He didn't have the support of the Cuban people. We installed Fidel Castro knowing he was a communist. Why would we do that? Because you got to have an enemy to frighten the people into backing the government. And in the same way, that's why we installed the communist government over there in China in 1949. That's all documented in my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, documented from government reports. And we even have those government reports. They are available, at least we can send to the pages, from Radio Liberty by calling 1-800-544-8927. You need to see the DVD on geoengineering. That, of course, is in the effort to change our atmosphere by spraying the DVD on Betty Martini, on aspartame, so much more material. Telephone number 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.
Let us all be grateful for a land so fair. As we raise our voices in a solemn prayer, God bless America, land that I love. Stand beside her and guide her through the night with a light from above, from the mountains.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Power Hour Radio Show. It is 20 December 2012. Tomorrow's a big day. It's either going to be or it's not going to be. What do you think's going to happen? It's going to be, I think, a change and a move toward the truth, a move toward something that we haven't seen in a long time, because people are changing the way they look at the world. And the way they're changing it is they're becoming more realistic about what's really happening, as opposed to what the television, the media, the cable news networks want them to believe is happening. We'll have a couple of updates on the Newtown shooting. Seems that the people there are saying, we don't want to base anything on anything yet because the story keeps changing. Now, if law enforcement investigates something, a story should not keep changing unless it's similar to what the federal government does. Benghazi 101, Benghazi 202, Benghazi 303. And speaking of Benghazi, the report is out today, or yesterday.